Hey everybody, welcome. It's Kevin Shortell, and it's December, already in the final month of the year here, December 1st, and I appreciate you all being on the webinar here with us today. I've got myself, I've got Ellen with me as well, running the boards.
Hi.
We have three different topics that we're going to be covering today. Some are going to be quicker than others. The lengthiest one there is going to be the second one where we talked about a deal Kevin Mullen is working on in New Jersey. And when we get to that one, I'm going to ask everybody to kind of put their thinking caps on and write in some suggestions and things like that, because it's kind of a, you know, it's one of those deals that we run into every once in a while where it's like, oof, which way do I go on this one? Do I just cut any potential losses and try to get out of this thing quick, or do I go the long haul with this one, which makes more sense? And every once in a while you get in one of those deals, and it's always nice to hear different points of view. So I'm going to open that up to everybody kind of thinking about what they would do, any suggestions they have, and start typing that in for us so we can cover that. So we'll have some fun with that one. We've got a foreclosure, occupied foreclosure issue, which surprisingly doesn't come up that much, by the way. And we'll go over that first. And then Eric has a question dealing with tax issues and sub-performing, and really with hardest hit funds on that issue as well, which also will bring in servicing issues and overseeing the people that you outsource to. So good questions, good topics, and we'll get a lot done this evening. So once again, thanks for being on. If you're brand new, just real quickly, I always like to let people know who are new, because we're constantly having new students come in. But if you are new and this is your first time being on this GoToWebinar format, you have a GoToWebinar control panel on the right-hand side of your screen. That allows you to participate a couple of different ways. You can type in questions. You'll see a little gray bar on there with white writing and a little triangle looking thing. And if you have questions that you want to type in, or statements that you want to type in, you can go ahead and type those in. That shows up on my screen and Ellen's screen, and we'll get to those and read through them, get those answered. We also have a way that you can talk on the computer or through your cell phone, or any phone, I guess. And if your computer is set up with speakers and a microphone and you're participating that way, you can just raise your hand. There's a little button there that shows a raised hand. Click on that. That shows up on our screens as well. And then we know that you are able to talk either through your phone or your computer on the call, and you have something to contribute or a question that you would like to bring up. I don't know that we'll have enough time on this call to have open Q&A, but that's something else we always like to do in this particular call, because this Thursday call is meant to be wider open, and please, there's no silly questions, there's no this question's too easy, anything like that. If you have questions that you want to submit and maybe you don't even want your name attached to it, that's fine too. We can talk about these concepts, but I can tell you, we don't look at any questions as being too simple or too difficult. If it's something that is more challenging, again, that's why we always try to and strongly encourage you submit the information in as early as possible. That gives us time to research, and quite frankly, there'll be times I get things and I go, I think it's this, but I better check with Charles, or I better check with Eddie on this, and Eddie does the same thing. Sometimes he'll refer to Charles or one of us on a particular topic, so it's always nice to have that extra time to work on those. But again, on this format, you have questions, you can type them in as well. Don't know that we'll have time to get to new questions that were not submitted because of the content that we have today, but we'll see how it goes. All right, so let's get on with it here. The first one came in from Tim, and Tim has an asset in Detroit. He's foreclosed upon it. He hired NAA, for those of you, of course, who don't know, National Asset Advisors, one of our preferred vendors. They specialize in property preservation as well as servicing notes, and they oversee renovations as well. So he hired NAA. They cleaned out the property, changed the locks, put a for sale sign on the property. So they secured the property. And I guess he had them do a little return trip to go check out the property, which, by the way, first of all, not a bad idea to do that on a monthly basis, especially on these non-occupied properties, because one of the several reasons, this being one of them, but another reason is if you have forced place insurance, which obviously in most all cases like this, you're going to have that forced place insurance, it's not a bad idea that somebody can go by, document it, take some pictures. That way, if any damage is done on the property, you've got a track record showing, look, it wasn't like that in this condition. Here's when our person went out that month and took pictures. So just keep that in the back of your mind. On a return trip, the locks have been busted. The for sale sign was thrown out into the street. And additionally, someone confronted the vendor, telling them that he lives there, that it's his house, and got aggressive and vulgar, and what can he do to rectify this situation? Okay, so we have a home that has been foreclosed, thought it was all vacant, and apparently someone was living there. Now, was this the previous person who was foreclosed upon, and they're just going to say, we're not leaving, I don't care what they say, or is this a squatter that has simply moved in there, or is this one of these people that think if there's a vacant home and they move in there and live long enough that they own the house and they own it free and clear? Bottom line is, Tim and everybody else, whatever that is, you will need to get the law involved at this point in time. Okay, it's not worth it to send out other vendors and those sorts of things. So what you'll need to do in this case is this person needs to be evicted. And that is a job of the sheriff's office in that area. So what you're going to want to do is go, and by the way, Tim, what county is this in and what state is this in?
It is in, the mailing address is Detroit. The actual city is, what is it, something Farms. It's a couple blocks from a very nice area.
Okay. The sheriff's department's normally on the county level. Do you know what county?
What was the city? I can look up the county.
Cities of Detroit.
It's in the city of Detroit. We've asked the police to meet us out there, and of course, I don't know if you've ever had your car broken into or anything and called the police. That is the lowest thing on their totem pole, and yeah, after 2 or 3 hours, they don't come out.
Yeah, and that's really why I'm saying you go to the sheriff's office and not the city police. City police, they don't look. They're going to go. This is a civil issue. They're not going to help you at all. In most counties, the sheriff, one of their responsibilities is to handle evictions and foreclosures and forced evictions. I mean, that's part of their job description. So here, thank you. Ellen just pulled up for you Wayne County, Michigan, which is their sheriff's website. And a lot of the websites I've looked at the sheriff's level, they have a whole procedure on how they do that on the website, so you may want to go through as she's doing here and see what they do, it might be under operations, what the procedure is, what paperwork do you have to have. So you're more than likely, let's see there, special response, communications, don't see it there. Civil process unit, no. You might have to make a phone call or explore the website here a little bit and see what the process is. So I would say the first thing you need to do on this is you need an attorney in that area that knows the procedures, okay? And you can get that obviously through posting something on the forum or on the membership website. Go to that Legal League 100, which is under helpful websites. So I would get the ball rolling with them because the sheriff is going to need to see some proof, obviously. So you want to make sure the first time you go to the sheriff's office that you go, here's all the documents showing that we do own the property, it was foreclosed upon, the person is trespassing, they have no right to be on there, and you want to force them to, or legally, make them go out there and get this person removed. And that's really the procedure. And because you're right, city police, they have no interest in this at all, and it's not under their jurisdiction, so to speak, but it is under the sheriff's office, and they would be the ones who would have to handle that. Any questions on that, Tim? What she's showing you here, by the way, is this is that Legal League 100, and these are attorneys that really specialize in our space, and I've heard nothing but good results from people who've utilized attorneys on this website. So you go there, you click on members, and just go down to Michigan and see the ones that are listed. Now, are you working with a servicing company already that has an attorney that you're working with?
No, not yet. I've used an attorney off of that that list and was extremely pleased with their performance.
Good.
We ended up not doing anything together, but they were responsive, knowledgeable, and just great to work with.
Super. That's nice.
We haven't contacted the sheriff. I think that's a great idea. I'll work on that now and report back to you.
Yeah, and I think, you know, again, double check if it's Wayne County. Is that all Detroit, or is that checking the zip code?
Okay. Wayne County.
Okay, great. Explore the website, maybe, but make a phone call or two, and that's they'll get that taken care of.
All right. Can I ask what she Googled to get the sheriff site?
Or Wayne County Sheriff.
All right. Great.
I knew you were going to say.
Very good.
I wish it was something more creative. I'm sorry.
Hey, if it's simple, it's simple.
I didn't have the address ahead of time, so I couldn't do any.
Yeah, and you may want to do Wayne County Sheriff Eviction, or, you know, add in some additional words on there, and it might lead you to where that is on the website, or just kind of explore what that is.
All right.
I did have to put Wayne County, Michigan. There is more than one county.
Oh,
Wayne
true.
County. No,
true,
there was a Wayne County in Ohio.
Thank you for your help.
You bet. Okay, Tim. All right. So that's how you handle that, everybody, and there's no sense in trying to do it any other way. You know, you don't strong arm somebody and send some other people out there. Or, you know, it's got to be handled legally. Good idea also, get some pictures if you can. Hopefully you have pictures of the property already. I know you had them secure the property. They changed the lock. So I'm hoping that you have pictures of the inside of the property now and the outside of the property, because it sounds like this guy, he may be vindictive as heck, and if he's thrown out of there, there may be a chance that he just elevates this to a whole different level very quickly. So having pictures would be a good idea, and that way if something happens and you have to file an insurance claim, you've got the pictures to prove it. Okay. Alrighty-roo. So the next one here.
There was a couple of related questions.
Oh, sure. Yeah, go ahead. I didn't see it. Go ahead.
Force-placed insurance will not apply to an REO, correct? He should have different insurance?
Force-placed insurance will not apply to an REO. Is that correct? Different types of insurances and different coverages. I believe that, yes, a force-placed means that, you know, it's a lender policy that's put on the property. So when you now own it, yes, there'll be a different type of insurance that you would have on it as a homeowner. You're correct. Yeah.
And then someone said, make sure you have insurance. Thank you, Russ. Mm-hmm. And then when trashed out, was there eviction evidence of occupancy?
Yeah, I don't know, but either way, whether it's hard to know sometimes. I mean, sometimes when people go through foreclosure, they just up and leave, and they'll leave furniture, they'll leave all of that. But I get the question, and you're probably thinking, well, NAA should let you know that it looks like it might be occupied, but hard to tell sometimes, to be honest with you. I mean, the guy might be living in there with no electricity, he's just crashing in there at night. So you don't know, but the solution either way is going to be the same, whether they had stuff in there or, a mattress on the floor and that kind of stuff. You just got to get the sheriff out there, and they'll get him out. That's how it's done. All right. Let's see. Dwayne's asking. That's an unrelated question on that. Dwayne, don't have an answer for you on that at this point in time. So everybody's waiting on that. Okay. So moving on here, we got Kevin Mullins' deal.
Kevin is unmuted.
All right. And Kevin has. One of these deals, like I said in the introduction here, that which way are we going to go on this one? Short term, long term, and it can be tough. It's again, this is where you've got to do exactly what he's doing, which is kind of lay out the scenarios, look at the numbers, think about what it is that you want to accomplish, what's your risk tolerance, what's your goals, and then make a decision on that one. And they're not always easy, and that's kind of the case that we have here. So as I read through this, what I want you all to on the webinar to focus on is look at his estimates over here, where it says my estimates $1,100 a month for rent, $3,750 for taxes, $45,000 in repairs. And we have documents of that where somebody went through, contractor did a whole detail list. And he's got $22,000 in it right now. It shows an after repaired value of $65,000. So if you were Kevin in this deal, what are you thinking? What are your potential outs? Part of it's going to be based upon that. The other part's going to be based upon what do you want to accomplish with this. So Kevin, give me a little bit more of what you're looking to do. What ultimately would you like to do, short term, long term, get out, put more money in? What are you thinking on this one, first of all?
Yeah, well, firstly, I do have an update. I talked to the contractor this morning because when he sent me the bid, and just to give a little background, this is in a relatively rough area.
We can pull a picture up with that. So, we've got it up on Google Earth here, I think.
Okay.
Go ahead.
So it's been a little tough to get contractors to go out there, and I talked with one where he just straight up said we don't work in that area. And the guy that I'm talking with right now, you know, he's definitely a contractor, but this is more of it's a Craigslist guy I connected with who he's basically acting like a general contractor, but he's not technically. So that's something I have to kind of keep in mind as well. But he's been doing repairs his whole life and that kind of thing. So when he went in and we first started talking, and I like him because he's very communicative, which is very important to me with these kinds of deals. But the 45 grand was basically to get it to like long-term hold. We're putting tile in the kitchen, kind of making it appraised for a good amount, because I told him that in a perfect world, I would like to do a cash-out refi, because I actually found a lender that will do one for low-price band properties. And then I just kind of let him know, you know, obviously I need this budget to be as low as it can be because it's a rental and we can't over, you know, improve in this neighborhood and we run the risk of the first tenants trashing it and all that stuff. And that's when he sent me that bid for $45,000, is kind of some rounding, but right in that ballpark. I just basically let him know, hey, you know, there's no way I could put 45 grand in this house. It just does not pencil. It wouldn't make any sense. I'd basically be in it for like 65 to make it worth 65. And he came back and said, all right, well, we can definitely cut some corners and bring down the quality of materials. And he basically shaved it down to 20 grand to get it to bare bones rental quality, where we were not doing anything in the bathroom except a deep clean. And he's a mold remediation guy, which is great because there's mold in there and all this and that. But basically, at this point, just as a quick update as of the last hour, my assumptions now are more along the lines of 20 grand to get it to basic rental condition, 45 to make it a nice ARV of probably around the 65. I'm being a little conservative depending on kind of your sources. But to answer your question, in a perfect world, I'd love to hold this property as a rental, but I honestly, you know, maybe with that 20 grand, that's an option, but I'm thinking the 50-50 model might be a little bit better way to go at this point based on his last conversation this morning with me.
Okay, so you're willing to put in more money to repair it and kind of play the longer the play on this.
Yeah, and I think that regardless, no matter what exit that I go with, doing at least the trash out, getting the carpets out of there because there's like feces in there and that kind of thing, and at least making it so that people can walk through would be the absolute bare minimum. But you know, putting 20 grand into it to make it rentable, that's definitely something, whether I hold it or sell it on 50-50, or even if we just make it that kind of rental condition, I sell it on the seller financing, you know, all three of those are still viable. And at 20 grand in, you know, it's pushing it. This is definitely not a big profit deal, but there could be money to be made. So I just kind of wanted to, you know, put it on the call, beat it up a little bit. And that was Grant, as of a conversation with him about an hour ago. So
good. And from that, my initial thought as you were talking through that was you need another opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Because for this guy to go from 45,000 to 22,000, you know, virtually overnight, if you want to know, it wasn't quite that, but I mean, maybe it was, very quickly cut it in half. I don't know. And it's not material cost. I mean, that's a lot of money, you know, to try to say that's just on reducing the quality of material and maybe not doing bathroom. I would get a second opinion from a different contractor. Did you contact NAA at all, or that's not something you want to do? Or
I did. So I got a property manager who says that they can manage contractors that I am just waiting to hear back from. They're kind of slow communication, so that's not a great starting point. But I definitely want to get a second bid for sure. And NAA, what happened with us is that it turns out there's bed bugs in this property, and I've already hired Terminix, but with all the trash in there, it's... Long story short is we were in like a catch-22 because their contractor said you got to get these bed bugs taken care of or we'll even walk this property, because they basically went in the front door, took a look at the area, determined there's bed bugs, and left. And so she said, well, I don't know what to do now because we have to do a trash out, but no one wants to go in there to do that of our vendors, and you got to do a trash out before you can do the termination. So I actually did find a guy to do the trash out, and I'm not sure if he just didn't do a complete job or if squatters came back again and put more trash in there, but apparently he cleaned it out and now there's stuff in there again. So this contractor I've been working with, I just at least want him to trash it out, secure it, and then... That'd be like the very least to be able to get another contractor in there, either through NAA or this management company I found.
Yeah, bed bugs makes no sense. You don't walk in a place and...
As far as why they won't get it?
No, as far as... You don't walk in a place and immediately there's bed bugs around. That makes no sense. They don't live on and that kind of thing. But whatever it is, fleas or something, most of that will come out with the tear out. So that's what I would do first. Get whatever's out of there. That doesn't make sense for me. I want somebody to go, well, we're not even going in until you take care of the. I've never ever heard that before. I mean, it just doesn't make sense to me. Have you just out of the box thinking? As I looked at this, and I've worked and bought property in neighborhoods like this and such, and you know, my experience has been that a lot of guys who do handyman type of work or work for contractors, you know, live in the middle lower income areas. Have you tried putting a sign out there looking for a contractor?
No. You mean like you just put a sign out saying
contractor wanted, or you know?
Okay.
Something like that. I think of something on property like that, because it's kind of a mixed area. When I was looking at it on Google Maps, I mean, you've got that area that Ellen was showing everybody, but when you turn around the camera, there's single family homes on the other side. There's some commercial. There's a school down the road. So you might be able to attract, you know, again, just kind of out of the box thinking, just putting a sign up there looking for a contractor. And I wouldn't be surprised if you got some calls on that. And your only issue, though, is you know, if people are breaking back in, you know, you've got to have that thing secured. So you think they broke the lock and put stuff in there? Or?
Well, I think the windows were unlocked because the contractor told me
that
they were unlocked. That was after. So I don't know if that was it or what, or... You know, honestly, it's me trying to manage a trash out guy from, you know, 3,000 miles away. He might have just not done a complete job. He sent me pictures and all that, but there could have been rooms he omitted, and it might be the fact that it was just him not doing a complete job and he was just making up lies. So I don't know if someone broke in or not. The contractor who's been doing bids for me has been there almost every day, and he hasn't said anything about more trash or steam people, so I don't know.
Have you tried Angie's List or Handyman.com? Or Home Advisors?
I did not. I looked at Angie's List for a second, and the closest contractor that was on Angie's List was in New York. And this is in New Jersey. So I don't know, maybe they travel, but they only had like one contractor on Angie's List for the area. What was the other one you mentioned?
Handyman.com.
Okay.
And what Handyman.com does is they actually guarantee the work. So the handyman that they have in their program, they go out, do the estimates for free, by the way. So all their estimates are free. There's fine contractor in your area. You got it. Okay. That's just for kitchen mod. If you go back and see where it says find contractors for free or find a contractor in your area next to post a project. So they come out and they do all the estimates for free, and if you hire them, this company guarantees that handyman's work, which you don't get. And just, you know, if you hire just a handyman can do everything that doesn't require a permit pulled. Okay, so this right. other guy that you're talking to who's can do the stuff as a contractor, but he's not licensed, if he starts doing your electric and plumbing and all that sort of stuff, and you get caught on that, code enforcement's going to be all up in you, okay? And they'll halt the job. They'll make it very difficult for you. So anything that like that that needs a permit, you better hire somebody that's properly licensed, because it will come back and bite you. And I'm betting even more so in New Jersey. So what I would look at is maybe using this service. I think the other one is Home Advisor. They advertise on TV now as well.
I've heard of them. We actually use them in an old company I used to work for, so I'm pretty familiar. Okay. Basically, from what I understand, when you sign up with Home Advisor, what Home Advisor truly is a lead generation for contractors, so you'll get like 5 phone calls from different contractors that's on their list, basically.
Mm-hmm. So I would try those, and again, if you want to do kind of out-of-the-box thinking, when you get somebody out there, they really should secure the place. So if there's broken windows, at least have them board them up. That's going to be inexpensive and cheap, and get that, change the locks or change a door if you have to secure that that place. When they're out there, maybe they can just put a sign up, you know, for you if you want to try that in conjunction with this. And get some other estimates out there, because I just don't I don't get a warm feeling when somebody gives me an estimate at 40 and then drops it down to 20. There's just something's wrong, you know.
That was my first thought too, is when I tell them I can't pay that.
Oh, great, okay, that's funny. But then you kind of step back and you go, wait a minute, that's a so you're trying to screw me before, and can I trust this person? So that's one of the things that you need to get, because as you know, you can't manage what you can't measure, right? So if you're not working with accurate numbers, it's hard to project a proper exit strategy time-wise and financially. So I think that's, before you can ultimately make your decision of what the out is, I think that's your first step. You've got to nail down what the rehab is in this property, because it's just kind of all over the board now, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, once you get that, then obviously the models that you've built here for the 50-50 change and everything else. So kind of hard to move on to that next step. But, you're obviously going in the right direction. I 50-50, again, now if you have your expenses are lowered by $20,000, that's going to change that model, and that would be a viable model for you. I know Mick and... Mick and Janet would tell you just trade it for a performing note. Trade the property for. You remember that?
Yeah.
You remember that at the expo, right?
Yeah, that was a good deal.
Yeah, just put a sign out there: "We'll trade for a performing note." Right?
No,
just, that's very unusual. Obviously, I'm joking, everybody. At the expo, Mick and Janet had a deal where they did just that. They had a property that was in a bit of trouble like this, but investor came along and said, well, instead of me paying you, I'll give you this performing note for the property, and they did a swap. And anyhow.
Yeah, swapped the dog for a note that was paying, so that's a pretty good one.
Yeah, that was pretty good. All right, so, rental, sure. I mean, everything starts to work if the expenses are down to that $20,000 mark. I think you're better off if the expenses do come down to that $20,000. I think you are better fixing it up and doing those, obviously, than just going ahead and selling it as is. I think you'll make more money that way. Yeah, but that's what I'm thinking on this. Let's see if anybody has any other ideas here, what they're thinking.
The other thing I was thinking about is maybe trying to find local RIAs just as a backup if it does turn out that, 20 grand is the lowest bid or whatever, and just not penciling, is to contact those guys. And, I'm not sure if this is one that a flipper would want just based on the street that it's on, but that was kind of my backup plan, is plan like D.
Well, again, you know, you've got a lot of investors who are also handyman or contractors that put in sweat equity. So again, if the cost is $20,000-$25,000, but you know, 10 of that is labor, and they're going to put in their own labor, then it's, you know, it's attractive to those investors. Let's see. Steven's saying you need a contractor insurance for an REO. Make sure it has vandalism. So contractor insurance, in my area, we call that, oh my gosh, mine just went blank. But yeah, you got to have some insurance on that. Also, if people are going to be working on the property, builder's risk. Builder's risk policy. That way, if anybody gets hurt on the job, you know, they should, if you're using a contractor, they should, a licensed contractor, they should have their own insurance. But it's nice to have a little backup yourself. But handymen typically don't. So not a bad idea. You know, make sure it's all covered. Make sure that you have vandalism covered as well. Very good. Let's see what else we got here. Yeah, Tim's kind of saying the same thing. Yeah, get another bid, and I think we all kind of recognize that. In practice, for everybody on the webinar, not a bad idea to always get at least two bids on these things, especially today when you have these services that we just showed you, Home Advisors Handyman.com, Craig's or Angie's List, that sort of thing. When you can do that and have enough way to contact people, not a bad way to do it. Of course, we've got NAA that you could utilize as at least one of your sources as well if you want to do that. Let's see. What else we got here? Yeah, and again, we're kind of getting the same responses here. If the repairs are $20,000, then 50-50 sure makes some sense, and that would even lower your price down from the $70,000 probably. You'd be able to sell it cheaper, which will probably sell it quicker and get somebody a higher yield than that.
If I could do the 50-50 model at 65, I mean, I think that's what the fair market value would be pretty close to, and I think the numbers would make more sense on the investor side doing it that way.
Mm-hmm. Let's see.
I was also somewhat conservative on the rent.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, I was surprised. I mean, when you pull a rental meter, the rental meter, the mean is 1,200 and the median is like 1,230. You know, I always like to be conservative anyway with my rent rate, but it was a lot higher than I would have thought, and maybe 1,100 is appropriate for a moderate repair.
Yeah, now on these, what's interesting, these are what I would call the row houses, but across the street, and you have single family homes. When you looked at Rent-A-Meter, when it's mapped out, you can click on each one of those and see if those are single family homes or this style of home, because there may be a difference in that. I'm just throwing that suggestion out there, because it didn't look like there were that many of these buildings in that area, did it?
Yeah, you might be right. The only other reason that I felt like it was probably a solid number is because, like, Zillow's estimate and all that stuff, I mean, Zillow thinks it rents for like $1,300, and maybe they're not taking into account that row home, but maybe I should check out Craigslist and active listings and see if there's other row homes too.
Yeah, that may be a little difference. If you click on that one, Ellen, then it'll pop up a number, but I think you can look at that property as well. But you can, will it open up a property? I guess it won't.
Yeah, I don't think they do.
Okay. But you could look where these properties are and kind of compare that on Google Maps. But I don't think they, you know, I don't think that's in their matrix, if you will. I think they just look at bedrooms and all that, because I know for sure they don't consider a difference between manufactured homes and stick and brick type of homes. So I'm thinking kind of the same thing here. So just double check that number as well. Alan's saying we had an REO with a massive flea infestation that we had to get rid of before contractors and property managers would work. That's crazy.
That's new to you, Kevin.
It really is, because we did this property, and my wife just walked in, but I had my wife and son out there, and he was real young. They were, he was probably 4 or 5 years old, and we're going through this property to look at buying it. And there are other investors kind of looking as well. The guy who was selling it was kind of smart. He set appointments, you know, about 5 minutes apart, you know, so people would overlap. And I got there first before my wife and son did, and I walked in, and as soon as I was in that house, the fleas were just, I mean, I'm walking around just, you know, scratching my legs, and a lot of people just walked in, they took two steps in, and then just turned right around and left, you know, so it worked in my favor. And all we did, we we had a crew, but again, they're not contractors. These were handymen that we hired to do tear out, and they just went in there and tore all that stuff out, and that eliminated most of the bug problem, because we got down to the bare floor. So that's new to me. By the way, my wife and son never made it in the house there, because there was about, I don't know, 6-7 foot black snake that just went right by them as they were walking up toward the house, and they're like, "That's it." So anyway, if you got to do that, I guess you got to do that. So and it's easy to find somebody who will do that. But bed bugs just sounds weird to me. Maybe they said bed bugs thinking fleas. Yeah, because bed bugs don't jump up or anything on you.
I don't know anything about bed bugs, but they were pretty firm on that one.
Okay, so maybe you got to do that. Thank you. Let's see. Michael,
is that an old Renometer? Did I send that, or are you guys pulling it up right now? Because what I pulled up yesterday, I feel like it was a little different.
I pulled it up. How many bedrooms is it, Kevin?
It's a 3-bed.
Okay, so this is 3-bed.
Is that the right address?
I think so.
Yeah, it's interesting because I'm actually working alongside you. I just did the address in 3-bed, and the median's 1,200. I guess I was off on the average. The average is 1,182, but just a little different than, I guess, those results for some weird reason. I also have the pro version, and I think that I have, like, a different time period for some reason. I think you get, like, the latest year or the latest 2 years versus the free one where it's only a year or something like that. I don't know.
Okay.
It seems like it's in the ballpark. Maybe it's $1,000 for rent. But
there we go. I just switched it to 12 months on the max listing age, and now we have the same thing.
Okay.
And I think it's interesting to talk about that too,
because it kind of shows a little bit of a trend, I feel like, from what's going on in the longer period versus now.
Michael Rogers is saying thumbtack.com works as well.
Okay.
Thumbtack.com. I'm not familiar with that one. Thank you, Michael. And also, Michael's had success listing properties like this on Craigslist if you want to sell it to a local investor.
Okay.
Let's see. Brian, yeah, I got you, Brian. Yeah, we took him as a young kid walking through some of those houses. There's no question, but the snake was enough for my wife. She doesn't deal with the reptiles, so that was I'll always remember that one. I got a good deal on that house because a lot of people just thought it was the fleas and everything else. They were just done, you know. So I made sure to tell everybody in there, "Oh man, a huge snake just went by." Yeah, all right. So there you go. I don't know anything else. We can help you with on that, or that's kind of
the direction
of what you need to do. Okay.
And
I know you probably know most of that, but again, everybody, this kind of illustrates to you that no matter how much seasoning you have on this, sometimes it's just good to talk these things through, you know, and just hear other people, other suggestions, and just kind of say, yeah, that's what I was thinking, and so totally good. So anytime you have deals like this, or you just want to bounce it off some people, this is a great way to do it, because you'll hear my opinion, of course, but you'll also hear, you know, from everybody else on the webinar who wants to contribute and put some input. So it's a great way to talk these things through and share ideas. So thank you, Kevin, for bringing it on, and thank you, everybody, for typing in your responses. All right. Moving on here to Eric. And Eric's got a deal here. It's a non-performing note in Florida. In fact, it's in, if I remember, Deltona, right? Deltona, Florida, which is not far from where I live. That's probably back to where I used to live in Lake Mary. It was just over the bridge. I got a big lake up there and the St. John's River and in Deltona. So I'm pretty familiar with the area. I'd have to look where this one is. Okay, so it's in Central Florida, non-performing note. Unfortunately, the borrower has terminal cancer and is applying for hardest hit funds. And the hardest hit fund representative told him that the lender needs to be the bank and not just some guy who holds the paper. I need help figuring this out so I can satisfy the Florida Hardest Hit Funds. I'm sure someone else has run into this. So, Eric, did you call Hardest Hit Funds or did your servicer?
Actually, the borrower did.
Aha. Uh-huh. Okay. Yeah,
the borrower is very proactive, and he's been in contact with them. And then he put me in contact with Hardest Hit Funds, and then today they sent me a new email address who I'm supposed to call and address. But when I was on the phone with Kevin Moore about a week ago, he said, you know, your servicer is really going to be the one that does a lot of this legwork stuff, so let them do it. And
okay.
I pretty much need help finding the right servicer. I would like to switch to a servicer who's a pro at this and has experience and has done it with an old school student. So
okay. That here's how this can work. Now, the borrower, I discount what they said in their response from Hardest Hit Funds because, quite frankly, they don't know what they're doing, and the way they described it, you just don't know. So I don't put a lot of faith in what they were saying there. So let's discount that. And so you're taking the right step is let's go back and explain it the right way, because this is not a land contract, number one. So, you know,
right.
We've had that issue in the past where some people say, well, land contract, they're not going to do. And I get that. We don't even have this issue. This is not a land contract. In fact, this was originated by Citicorp.
Right.
So the approach is that I would take with them is starting to respond back to them. This was a Citicorp originated loan, and go with that. Now, a lot of the hardest hit funds do require that they work with a servicer, not you as an individual. Having said that, nothing wrong with you going to the Hardest Hit Fund website. Hardest Hit, you learn everything you possibly can about it, the Florida one. So be prepared yourself so you know how to present this. Because if your servicing company is going to present this for you, basically they become your mouthpiece. Okay,
mm-hmm.
You're the one behind the scenes pulling all the strings. You're the puppet master. They're only going to approach it the way that you are told. Now, they can bring their own experience into that deal as well. But I can tell you this, in all the case studies that I have with Hardest Hit Funds, the driver of this train, the one that was working with Hardest Hit Funds, was the student, was you, was the investor. Now,
okay.
There's another case that I have in Tennessee, I think it was Keith Steele. Keith called Hardest Hit Fund in Tennessee, was getting all kinds of response from them, again, learning the program, learning the ins and outs, and asking a lot of questions about how it works. And then they found out later on into that conversation that he was actually the loan holder, and they said, oh, we're not supposed to talk to you. I didn't know that you owned the loan. I thought you were the servicing company. We can only talk to the servicing company. So he hired FCI. Okay, FCI is a preferred vendor of ours.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's in the vendor section of the website, and FCI went through that whole process, and Keith said they did a good job. And again, Keith was kind of dictating, here's what we do next, here's what we do next, because you can't really, as you can imagine, I'm very familiar with the program, but do I know exactly the intricacies of every state? Of course not.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you can't expect the servicing companies to have that same knowledge base either. So step one, I would say, is learn everything you can about the program. The Hardest Hit Fund in Florida, they've got a lot of good information. Go to that Secretary of State's website, read through the addendum, go to the Florida website, read through all of the frequently asked questions, read about the process. So you go in there armed with knowledge. And again, the only servicing company that I'm aware of, and please help me out, everybody on the webinar, if you know of other ones, but the only one that I've heard that has worked through that process is FCI.
Okay.
I know that's just what I've heard, again, but I'll see what happens on the webinar here. Somebody else might say, hey, I used this company or that company, and they did it for me as well. So we'll see what
okay.
But that's the approach. So with the borrower, at least on the positive side with them, they do want to get something resolved. They do want to move it forward. So I would communicate with them as well to kind of let them know, look, just kind of put the brakes on that. Our servicing company is going to be working with them, and then we'll need you at some point in time to have this, that, or the other. So if you can give them, based upon the research you've done in Florida, and which may include phone calls and everything else, you may tell them, here's the information we need from you. We need, I don't know if they have disability or if they have any kind of income statements or save, whatever it is that Florida needs, give them the homework of preparing that, but tell them again, don't submit anything. There is a process involved here, and it's very intricate, and I have a company that specializes in this that is working on your behalf to get this done. Once we do what we need to with the state, then we're going to request that you do this. So keep them, you know, kind of in communication, but don't let them get in the mix on this.
Okay, so this borrower is very on top of things, and he's aggressively trying to stay in his house. So before I even knew about it, he had already applied for hardest hit funds.
Okay.
So the application's in. It's been in a couple of weeks, and he's working with this gal. And this gal emailed me today, and she also said, "Hey, Eric, it just can't be. You know, it's supposed to be a bank." And so she sent me an email that says, "Here's where you send an email to these people, the advisor, and ask them how to become a participant, a lender." But I think maybe right now my next move is to call up FCI and kind of maybe talk to some buddy there to see how this could work. And I think maybe transfer the loan over to FCI. What do you think about that?
Well, again, research the – she's wrong, first of all, okay? It's not just for banks. It's for lenders. And if you read through the Florida documents, you'll see that. So, again, that's why I'm saying go through that first because you're the note holder. And it's not you. You're not some guy. You're a company.
Right. Yeah. Right?
So she's wrong on that. It's just her experience is that she's only ever worked with banks. Now, here's what she doesn't realize. Most of those banks are not acting as banks. They're acting as servicing companies. Mm-hmm. Most banks don't hold paper. They're essentially servicers for Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac. So they work with servicing companies. No problem. You've got one, FCI. So she's a little off on that as well.
Sure.
Glenn is saying I've used FCI for hardest hit funds. But they expected me to be the person motivating the borrower and moving forward. Right, just as we were saying, you know, you've got a good borrower here that wants to be proactive, but let's kind of have them pause for a minute, let you do your side, and so good. So, I get that, and that makes sense. I mean, it's not FCI's job to motivate that person. It's
right.
Gotcha. Yep. Let's see. Mahmood says. Oh, he's got a different question. Let's see, Ellen. Okay, I may be able to do that offline there, Peggy. Let's see, Thumbtack, got it. Okay, so that's all I've seen on response for that. So
okay.
Why don't you also contact FCI? Learn about the program, put the borrower on kind of notice that you've done your job, let us do ours, and then we can pick this up again. And third, contact FCI and see what their experience is in Florida, see what their approach is, how they want you to communicate that with them and get the ball rolling. And then you can say, okay, we can do that, and let's talk then about rolling this over and having them do the service.
I will do that.
Awesome.
Very good. Thanks so much.
Oh, you bet. No problem. Okay. So Dwayne's question earlier, and this is one that he typed in there, is what time is the new batch of notes being released today? Because we do have a notes coming out today on Notes Direct to Titanium Thursday today. And I don't have an answer for you. And I think it's normally out by now. Ellen, you've been probably watching that on your other screen, to be honest.
I haven't checked it in the last probably 5 minutes, but I could.
I haven't received an email either on it. I think, Dwayne, that it may be coming out a little later than normal because that same department in the office was working furiously to close on a huge note purchase today as well. So they're doing a big buy today that they're closing on, and they're also doing a release today. So I think the man hours got a little stretched today. So I haven't received an email yet either on that, Dwayne. So it's not like you haven't missed anything. We're just all kind of waiting on that, and I'm sure an email will go out when it's been updated, or just check and refresh every once in a while to see when that has come out. Let's see. The thumbtack, Sharon is saying, is for vendors to advertise services. You submit a need project, and the vendors then pay a small fee to submit a bid to you at no cost. Small fee to the vendor, yeah. All services, all type services. Okay, great. So thumbtack.com. That we would have to do offline there, Peggy. And Peggy's saying, do other servicers besides FCI do this service? This service being working through the hardest hit funds. I have to default back to my statement, which was, you know, the feedback that I've received from students is they have used FCI. I haven't received emails or anything on this call even or a webinar saying that we used Allied or we used Madison. Any of those servicing companies can do this. It's really just a matter of the procedure of calling hardest hit funds and filling out the proper paperwork. So all of them can do that. It's just, have they done it? Do they have some experience in that? And I just don't know other than FCI, because I have case studies from students, excuse me, that has used FCI in that capacity. But not all states need, you don't need a servicer. You know, if you're self-servicing a non-performing note or something, and you know, you can call in that capacity, call and gather information and you know, get prepared on what you need to do. In fact, I think I mentioned this in Tennessee, maybe I didn't, when I was talking about that example that Keith was working on. I did, yeah. Keith was calling them. He didn't know you had to just be a servicer, so he just called and gathered information. Once they found out he was the owner, then they said, well, can't talk to you anymore, but your servicer. He didn't even have that loan boarded. That's what I left off. He didn't have the loan boarded with a servicing company at all. He was self-servicing that because it was a vacant home. So he just transferred the servicing over to FCI, and they got it done for him. Michael's been hovering around his computer since 1 o'clock waiting for the release as well.
I think he's the only one.
Yeah, and Glenn's making another good point here. So the hardest hit fund office in the state will have a list of servicers that they work with, and I've seen that in Florida as well. So when you're gathering information about how the program works, they do list servicing companies on there that have to be at least registered. So it could be one of those things where FCI simply has to register in Florida if they're not registered already. So it may take a little time for them to do some submission, or there may be servicing companies on there that you could utilize. But again, that's why it's so important on this. You got to do some of your own homework so you know the program in the state. So it just illustrates that even further here. All right, so let me see if I can get Mahmood's question here. I think I saw that. Yeah, I think I've got an email on this. Mahmood purchased a non-performing loan in Ohio, and unbeknownst to us, we were assessed an unpaid water and sewer charge to the tune of $8,000. So I'm assuming, well, that was placed on the property. You just bought the note, maybe you own the property now. This was due to the burst water pipes from the time the borrower had left the property vacant. Later that same year, we foreclosed on the property. Okay, there you go. Later that same year, we foreclosed on the property and acquired a sheriff's deed. Is it possible that in Ohio, a change in the ownership of the property would be able to proceed without addressing the water tax liens? In our case, even though Ohio property at the sale went back to the lender, it was deeded to a different entity. Okay, so if I understand that correctly, bought the note through one entity, and then when it was foreclosed, they probably did a substitution of bid or something like that into another entity. Still owned by Mahmood, maybe some partners or what have you. So that entity received the sheriff's deed, which is typical of the type of deed that you get when a property was foreclosed upon. So started a non-performing loan, now it is their property in this other corporation. So the question becomes then, in Ohio, do the water liens run with the property? The tax liens, of course, will. Tax liens, unless it was taken out of the proceeds of the sale, yes, you own that. Those liens you're going to have to take care of. So in other words, if somebody else bought that property at the foreclosure sale, they would have had to pay that. So if it went back to you, the lender, there was no other bidder. So unless you paid that at the closing to get the sheriff's deed, or at the foreclosure sale, I should say, to get the sheriff's deed, then yes, you will have to pay those property taxes. Those don't go away. That's county-wise. The water issue is probably a city issue. Okay, so the county's the tax liens, the city more than likely is the water. Now, it could be county as well. You are probably going to have to pay that because that will typically run with the property. All right. Can it be negotiated down? Perhaps. And I've seen cases where that has happened. I've seen cases where they absolutely had no interest in doing that as well because the county needs revenue also. Is it worth it to try to negotiate it down? Absolutely, because maybe the county would rather go ahead and just have that resolved for something now versus having that, that lien on there. I don't think you'll have an issue if you've already received the sheriff's deed, if you've received that property with the two liens on it, the taxes and the water. So if they didn't force you to pay those at the foreclosure sale, I suppose that can continue to hang out on the property unresolved for a period of time. What that period of time is, I don't know. I'd have to see, you know, look at the language of the lien and all of that. If you, that's what I would do. Read through the letter of the lien. Do a little research on that in that county, Mahmood, and see how it might work. Because it could be one of those things, if you bring it up to try and negotiate it, it enacts something. You know, and now they're on you, and now they want to get it, versus maybe you just kind of hold out and see if you start to receive some letters and read what the letters say and go from there. So if you've got the deed, you know, that then you own the property. It has some liens on it, but again, it may be something you just resolve later on. Maybe you're going to fix it up and resell it. When you resell it to somebody, it's going to, you know, need to be resolved at that point. So that's what I would say. I don't know if we can get Mahmood on there or not, but that's what I would say about the liens. If this was in Indiana, by the way, I know you said it's in Ohio. See, Indiana won't even let, okay, Indiana won't even let you foreclose unless you pay the property taxes, right? So different states, different things. Mahmood, did that help, or was I on track with your question?
Yes, almost. So I was a little confused as to why they allowed the sheriff's deed to be written up without the past taxes, not so much the taxes, but the water liens still outstanding.
Yeah.
So from what I'm understanding, what you're saying is that they will still stay with the property until, you know, when I sell it, and that's when I'll have to pay?
Yeah, because it's going to be hard for you to sell the property to somebody and all of a sudden you don't, you know, they're going to need clear title. So assuming they're going to get bank financing, they're going to need clean title, and it would have to be paid at that point in time. But it, in Florida, there's been deals like that, same thing. They, you know, at Florida, they'll just keep those liens on there, and you can get the deed and move forward. They would like it to be resolved at some point. So what will probably happen is you'll receive a letter at some point in time about the lien on it from, again, city, county, municipality, whatever it is. You'll receive some kind of letter from them, and that will take you to, well, what's the next step?
Well, we fixed the property up and we're about to sell it, and now they've popped up, so that's become an issue.
Okay. Are you selling it with seller financing? Are you selling it with
conventional financing?
Okay. Yeah, so, yeah, it's going to have to be cleared up then. Like I said, that you can't convey title unless it's clear, and this is clouding that title. So title company won't close it. So what you'll need to do is pay it. So that puts you in that other phase of, all right, let's see. I know it's $8,000, but maybe we can offer them $4,000. And maybe they'll take less. So it's worth trying. See if you can save yourself some bucks there.
Okay. So I have two more questions on that. Firstly, when we did our title search before buying the loan, they were not on there. They appeared all of a sudden after we bought the loan. So we were caught with our pants down. So yeah. How do you overcome that? How can you prevent that from happening?
You really can't. How would you know that happened? That's one of those things you can't. I've seen contractor liens do that. In Florida, they've got, it's either 30 or 45 days to file a contractor's lien, and that could be, well, you bought the property and it's still within those 45 days, and then they file the lien on it. So it can't happen. It's just, the title company did their job. They showed you, here's what the title is when we assessed it, and this just occurred after. So there's not a whole lot you can do to do that other than calling the utilities ahead of time.
So that's an additional due diligence piece of work, but not only calling the tax office, but also the utilities.
Right, and who knows if you would get an answer, a correct answer on that as well. If you call somebody, does somebody at that administrative level at the utility company know anything that there's an outstanding lien on it? I don't know. Maybe they do, maybe they don't, but that would be the only way that I could think of that you could get a heads up to that, just that extra step of due diligence.
Okay. All right.
Does not include utility.
Thank you.
Let's see. Bill is saying, this may be a good point too. Bill is saying Pro Title, I don't know who you use, but Pro Title Standard does not include utility liens, I believe. You have to expressly request it. I don't know if that's, I'd have to look at that, Bill, and see if that is the case. But if it's not, here's the problem though. If it's not filed, so the timeline is Mahmood acquires the property and then the lien shows up later, it wouldn't even be on public records. So there's no way for anybody to see that until it becomes a part of public records, and that's kind of what he ran into. So it just kind of overlaps. So only way that you could prevent that I can think of off the top of my head is calling utilities, and maybe that's something you add to your due diligence just as an automatic. If you're buying a property that's vacant, and especially now in the winter, you're going to have pipes bursting and that sort of stuff. So as you're buying into the first quarter, let's add that to our regular due diligence. You just call the utilities and see if there's any pending liens on there. And I think that's the only way to avoid it. All right.
Thank you.
Look at that. Right at the top of the hour here. So good webinar, everybody. Good information. Thank you so much for your participation, by the way. It's great seeing everybody kind of think through these things, and as we're going through it and interacting, it makes for a good webinar. So, Ellen, what else do we have? Any announcements or anything?
The titanium offering is coming out today.
Okay, so sometime today, and then the general release in December. What month is that? On December 6th. So you'll have assets. We've got pipeline is filling up. Let me put it that way. So look forward to a good first quarter next year as well, with plenty of assets to look through then. But keep an eye out for that, either on the first day or on December 6th. And I guess that is everything. Yep. Maybe some of you will see in Denver. We got a 3-day class in Denver this weekend, so I'll be heading out there tomorrow, catch up with the rest of the crew. So thanks, everybody, for being on the webinar. Hope you enjoyed it and look forward to talking to you again in the future. Ellen, thanks, as always, for running the boards.
My pleasure.
All right. Good night, everybody.